Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson. I'm alongside my lovely co-host,
Casey Clapp.
Casey, g'day.
G'day, Alex.
How you be?
Oh, very good. Apologies. We should put this out there right now.
Uh-huh.
Our accents are terrible.
Yes, but I do feel that the people of Australia who host the tree of today's episode,
yes,
will probably just laugh it off.
Yeah, they'll just shrug and be like, Americans.
Yeah.
They speak like idiots.
Back to the beach.
Oh, gosh, they do have a nice place. I have not been to Australia. Alex, have you?
I have not been to Australia. I think it's on my list.
Yeah.
Well, I would be interested, sure.
Is it a metaphysical list? Like, you can't actually pick it up and look and confirm one way or the other?
Here's the thing. This might offend some Australians. I hope it doesn't.
Uh-oh.
And we will almost surely get some emails about this correcting me or giving me counter evidence. I don't think... I want to travel for food.
Ah, okay.
I'm most interested in traveling to places that have rich culinary scenes, right?
Like Bangkok.
And histories. Sure.
Okay.
Mexico, Italy, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Australia is like really food centric. They have, of course, a lot of really good seafood.
Okay.
But can you think of any like Australian dishes?
I saw, I think Jeff Corwin eat a honey out of the abdomen of an ant species.
Yeah. See, that's just honey though.
But it's from the abdomen of a species of ant.
Okay.
You literally pick the ant up and you go...
And ew,
just pull it, yeah, right out from it. Yeah.
You slurp it like a grape out of its skin.
Exactly.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, that's culinary as heck.
But anyway, yeah, I think they have a lot of good seafood. I just don't know if they're like, you know, there's a lot of really good, interesting culinary things happening in Australia.
So I think what you're saying right now, this is what I'm hearing, is we need to go to Australia to either A, see, or B, cook some Australian-themed stuff. Maybe kangaroo. I feel like that's bushmeat down there.
Oh, sure. I'm sure some people eat kangaroo. They're like an invasive species, aren't they?
In Australia?
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure they're quite native.
I'm not using the word invasive correctly.
A nuisance.
I mean, a nuisance. Yeah, they're just like, they're fucking everywhere. They're like, they're like rats on a farm.
Oh, shoot them. I feel like I have heard that. But you know what? They were there first. We'll move on. We got to talk about trees rather than kangaroo anyway.
That's right. And Casey, today we have a fantastic tree to talk about. A lovely smelling tree that I'm quite excited to talk about.
Oh, do you have the scent right now?
In my nose?
Yeah.
You know what? I do have some incense that I can light for this episode.
Let's do it.
Should we do that?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. We have lit the eucalyptus incense.
It's wonderful, Alex.
It is wonderful. So far, it's just burning off that tip, so it just smells like smoke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought that's what incense smells like. All right.
But it will become a nice eucalyptus smell.
That's going to be very settling, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this will be a calm episode.
I think it should be. Everyone, take it easy.
Yeah. Relax, everybody. Grab yourself a
cool
Beverigino.
Well, Alex, you're right. We're talking about a tree today. It's going to be the mountain ash, confusingly enough, which is a eucalyptus, Eucalyptus regnans.
Right, sometimes called the swamp gum.
Yeah, I love that name. There's another one, too. It's the stringy gum.
Yeah.
I've heard that also.
I like swamp gum because it just feels like I'm chewing gum when I say it.
Yeah, and would you imagine doing that in a swamp as, like, you're chewing gum up to your chest in, like, swampy water?
I think so.
Which means that inevitably you'd have, like, up to your knees would be sediment.
Yeah, just contracting malaria.
I feel like you would hate that so bad.
Yeah.
I feel like if I would not like it, it must be something that you would literally try to fly away from.
Yeah, I remember you inviting me to the bush one time in North Carolina or something.
Probably, I don't know.
Yeah, you were like, I don't know if you... You said, I don't know if you're into the, like, the bush. And I was like, I don't know. Like,
I'm not sure what you're asking me right now, Casey.
Well, that's right, Casey. Today we're talking about the eucalyptus, or the mountain ash eucalyptus.
Yes.
Eucalyptus regnans?
That's it, regnans.
As we do every episode, we are going to travel to Australia in some absurd way.
Yes.
And
what way? Okay, so right now, we ended last week in, I think it was the northeastern, I'm sorry, Europe.
Yes,
Central,
we were in that.
Southern Europe.
The Alps, that's right.
So we're already at high elevation. I bet you we could just glide there if we took like one of those big glider planes.
Can I?
Just kind of hop?
Yes, I like that.
Okay.
I have another proposal.
All right, I'm here, I'm ready.
Because we're talking about marsupials today.
That's true.
And Australia's full of them.
Chock full.
I think we should take sugar gliders.
Are they marsupials?
Yeah, they are.
I gotta look up a sugar glider real
Sugar glider are just some of the most precious animals on God's green earth, Casey.
Sugar glider.
Yeah, don't keep them as pets, though.
All right. Oh, those are adorable.
Yeah, and they glide around. We can hop on a couple of them. And
omnivorous arboreal nocturnal gliding possums. That is beautiful. Oh, wait, and belonging to the marsupial infra class. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I imagine you and I would hop into the little pouch, poke our little heads out, and then have it be like, are you ready? And then we take off like the eagles taking us to Mordor.
Yes.
All right, cool.
If anybody out there listening is a good artist and can render this
please
in
send it to
colored
us.
Pencil or anything,
we will give you $5 whole.
So Casey, we land, we drop out of the pouches in the forests of
Tasmania and Australia. Really, it's the very southern edge of central Australia and Tasmania. I guess it's the point. It feels like it's southern to me.
And we look up and we see these beautiful trees. And I say, oh my God, what are these? And you say, they're eucalyptus regnans. Casey, let's talk about these trees. What do we see? Smell? That's an important one today.
It's very important.
And feel.
So you noted you're looking up. And that is because these trees are super, super tall.
Magnificently so.
Magnificently tall. The tallest of all the broadleaf trees.
This is a great takeaway.
Yes, all the angiosperms, I would say.
Wow.
Yeah, instead of the only thing that beats them, and this is a contentious issue. Everyone who's listening to this in Australia is probably just like, nah, we did it. And I am saying, no, we can't necessarily prove it. Not to mention, technically, there might be a Douglas fir that was taller. But, Alex, they say that there's potentially a eucalyptus regnans, the Australian mountain ash, that has grown taller than any other recorded tree in the world.
Any other tree, period.
Period.
So it's possible that a mountain ash is the tallest tree ever in the world.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Exactly it. Yeah, they're huge trees, first off and foremost, and they at least get second place, first place in their category. You know, you have to have different categories of this, you know, so like they're first place in the broadleaf category. There's no broadleaf tree taller.
Okay,
that's
great.
For sure. Other than that, you're going to see a bunch of really, really cool bark, and that is what really draws eucalyptus trees apart from a lot of other different kinds of broadleaf trees, is that they kind of have, there's like 700 different species of eucalyptus.
Yes, and you and I had a bit of a tricky time figuring out which species, because every episode of the show, we cover one specific species.
Correct.
So it was kind of hard, because I sort of thought eucalyptus was a species.
Ah.
But eucalyptus is, of course, a genus.
Yes.
So there are 700 types of these things.
Exactly. Not all of them are trees, though.
Okay, this confirms one of my suspicions. I always thought a eucalyptus was a bush.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's huge, huge trees.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like saying oak, like, oh, we're going to cover oak today.
Right.
Where there's like, oh, well, which one, you know?
Yeah, so we landed on this regnans business.
Yes, the mountain ash, because it's the biggest, and you know, yeah. I like superlative trees. So the other thing that we always love to talk about, I was talking about their bark. So I brought up 700 different species, because each species has like different kinds of bark. Where there's some trees that, like a cherry is a great example, where they always have the same kind of bark, where if it's a cherry, it's going to have a similar bark pattern. They all look really similar. Okay. Birches are similar in that regard as well. Other trees do this, like the spruce. All spruces kind of just share the same bark characteristics.
Hmm.
Eucalyptus, though, do not. Some are perfectly smooth and then will have... Each year, they put on a new layer of bark, but the outermost layer, the old one, the years old layer, just falls off, either in like big straps or like little plates or like, you know, giant. I think I've heard about being like literal huge, almost like you wrap something in plastic.
Uh-huh.
And like an entire sheet of plastic would fall off. It's like entire sheets of bark just exfoliate. I don't think they're big enough to like cause problems, because they're like a millimeter or less thick.
They're so thin, yeah.
Yeah, but they just like flap away.
That's incredible.
But then others will keep their bark for a long time. Some keep just like the lower portions of bark, which is really interesting, because how does a tree know that the bottom... like section is where the bark stays and the top section exfoliates?
Yeah,
it's very strange. Other trees do this. The madrone does this to an extent. The sycamores do this to another extent.
Are they protecting their roots?
They would be protecting the lowest bark, the lowest section of the trunk, but that's where fire comes through, because they are famously fire dependent or fire adapted species.
Cool.
In fact, there's theories that is why they're so broadly distributed in Australia, is because when the Aborigines first came over like 40,000 years ago, they started lighting fires more often than they would naturally occur without human intervention, and then the tree just started to grow everywhere because it was adapted to that kind of thing.
Okay.
So this tree, though, it loses its bark all the time, especially in that topmost section. The bark will just kind of fluff away.
Okay.
But it will have kind of little puzzle piece long straps. It's somewhat colored, I believe. Like, you can kind of look at it and see where old bark is retained and some bark is new. So some parts of it are bone white. Some of it have like these old sections that are still kind of stuck. So you get this like almost long mottled look along the kind of the stem. It's really beautiful.
Sounds beautiful. And looks beautiful.
I can see the photos. Yeah, I was going to say, you Googled them. You saw that.
Yeah.
Well, they also have a really beautiful leaf. And this is one thing that I really think are just not, like, everyone kind of knows what the leaves of eucalyptus look like, but I don't know if people really have paid attention to some very specific things about them.
Hmm.
So the leaves of most eucalyptus trees, when they're young and juvenile, they will be oppositely arranged.
Okay.
And they will be like circles, almost like a stem that comes up with a circle around it.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Interesting. Yeah.
And then as it becomes mature, then all of a sudden they're alternately arranged. They have little stems that come out, little petioles. And then those leaves are like these long, kind of curved, lanceolate, lance-shaped leaves.
For the stem with the circle around it, just for a visual, I'm imagining like putting a peach ring on my finger.
What do you mean by a peach ring? What is that?
The gummy candy.
Oh, yes, that's exactly it. I'm sorry. I can't even picture that.
Were you thinking Princess Peach's ring when she gets engaged to Mario?
Of course I was, because that's what I always think of.
Yeah, you're always making video game references.
Yeah, mostly I'm thinking of Mario video games, because that's my go-to.
Oh, have you played Mario Odyssey?
Well, of course not.
Well, we should change that.
All right. I don't even know what that means.
It's the newest Mario game.
There's still new Mario games?
Of course.
Wow. I had no idea. What else? How many times can you beat Bowser, you know?
They keep coming up with new ways.
Well, this tree has those same kind of leaf fashion. So it looks like this Princess Peach ring over your finger.
Uh-huh.
And then as it grows older, it switches, and it's really strange. I think this is one of the only species that changes, not species, kinds of trees that do that so extraordinarily.
It's like a metamorphosis.
It really is. Like, it feels very strange. Like junipers, they'll have leaves that are different based on juvenile and older leaves, where some are like awl shaped, where they're really pokey, but then they will turn turn into oppressed, like scale-like leaves.
Weird.
So they'll also do that, but they won't change like their orientation going from opposite to alternate. Like that's just so strange.
Yeah. Do we know why that happens?
I don't know. I haven't figured that out. I'll have to look into it. I assume that it is just like when young plants start growing, they have, it's called cotyledons. They're like the two first leaves that come out.
Oh, yeah.
The dicots versus monocots, grasses versus not. And the dicots, their leaves will always look almost exactly the same, the very, very, very first two. That's why they're in such a large group, and that's why it's such a kind of fundamental classification.
Okay.
Where it's like, okay, all these leaves look exactly the same, but then the next leaf or the next leaves that come out look completely different.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you can see this with say the incense cedar and I guess just not that. They're not quite in the same family, but the very first juvenile leaves to come out on most plants look completely different than all the mature leaves that come out. But usually it's just those very first two.
Yeah.
So it might be that in this case for the eucalyptus, it just has some reason that instead of being just the first two that look this very specific way, the first several all look this way. And
right.
Then after a while, a different gene kicks in and then it goes to whatever the mature leaves should look like.
Well, Casey, let's talk about the flower.
Well, the eucalyptus flower is a really, really beautiful thing. And there's a lot of different kinds of them. Basically, what they do is they have, they're in the myrtle family. And that usually references like their little capsule-like fruit that comes from this. But their flowers are like these really big, they're like, I guess these ones for this specific species, they just kind of pop out and the flower in March and May. So are like classic spring here, but down in Australia, that is fall, I believe, or late summer.
Oh, sure.
I think that's correct. So these ones have white flowers, but other eucalyptus have flowers that are purple, that have like these really like maroon colors and things like that. And they usually have a bunch of big stamens that pop out. Their sepals and their petals are fused together to kind of have this like covering. So they just kind of open up, send out all these little stamen and pistils, and then they look like kind of bottle brushy kind of things where you could like clip one off and like put on powdered makeup or something like that.
They sound beautiful. They look beautiful.
I think they are really beautiful, and there's so many different kinds, 700 different species,
right?
So they all have, you know, a little bit of different flavor to them.
Nuts. Well, Casey, are you ready for some Croson homegrown trivia?
Oh, you bet I am.
All right. We have three topics today.
All right.
For the eucalyptus. I keep calling it the eucalyptus. It's not called the eucalyptus.
That's fair. It's a eucalyptus. You can just say, yeah, I think it's fair. It's just also, you know.
Okay. I'm just going to say this eucalyptus.
Yeah, there you go. That works out perfectly.
All right. Human use, animal use, and etymology.
All right.
And then a little bonus fun fact at the end.
Ooh.
So let's do it. Okay. So human use. Eucalyptus trees at large are extremely popular for the pulpwood industry.
Ah.
Of course, pulp being used to make paper.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
So the oil from the eucalyptus makes a great cleaning product.
Uh-huh.
Air freshener, as we are smelling.
We are.
Candles, incense, etc. You can also, Casey, have you ever hung a sprig of eucalyptus in your shower?
I have, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a specific species that is better or worse than that, because I had almost no luck.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. So I guess for anyone who's not familiar, the idea is that you hang a sprig of eucalyptus in your shower, and then when you get the bathroom really hot and steamy, it basically volatilizes the smells and the oils in the leaves.
That's right.
Then your shower smells great. Also, it's somewhat antibacterial, so you help to like keep it clean.
That's right, and maybe the scent, the aroma is very calming, so you might have a nice calming shower.
Right.
Eucalyptus are also water guzzlers, Casey. These motherfuckers love water.
You know, I'm a water guzzler. I was going to drink some water right now.
Hey, cheers, my friend.
Yep, clink.
Just like a eucalyptus. It's down there by your foot.
Yes, thanks, Alex.
Got it. So eucalyptus are planted strategically in some places to lower the water table and fix like soil salination.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it makes your soil healthier, right?
Yeah.
So it's planted in swamps to drain swamps.
Oh, you should plant some of those in Washington, D.C., if
okay,
you know what I mean.
Okay. It had to be said. It can also reduce standing water and reduce the risk of malaria.
Interesting. I wonder why. Oh, I guess it would because it gets rid of the water.
Yeah, that standing water is just a hotbed, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, more like a cool bed.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's water.
So, Casey, in my search for things about planting eucalyptus in swamps, I found a political cartoon.
Oh, right.
From 1884.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
August 27th, 1884, from Puck magazine or publication.
Honestly, pretty classic.
It's a centerfold, Casey.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to describe it to you here.
Is this safe for work?
It is safe for work, yes. It's dumb, but like I feel like a lot of political cartoons are. We'll put a picture of this in our Instagram post for this episode so you all can see it for yourselves. It's called The New Democratic Eucalyptus Tree Purifies a Political Morass. It depicts Grover Cleveland.
Ah, good old Cleveland.
As a large eucalyptus tree. Like his head is like kind of on this eucalyptus tree. He is part of the tree, labeled Eucalyptus Clevandus. His roots are labeled honor and honesty. And his branches spread over a swampland. Okay. And these gaseous ghosts are being released from the swamps. And the ghosts are labeled. This is all you got to do. Just label things in your political cartoon.
Yeah. It's just very imagery heavy.
Yes. And you have to basically tell people what it means in the illustration. The ghosts are labeled stupidity. KKK, bourbonism.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Kellyism, whoever that is. Yeah. Spoils system. And then there's the Democratic headquarters in the background. So, of course, and it's not subtle what this is saying.
Yeah, which is, yeah.
That, you know, Cleveland will drain the swamp.
Yeah, right. I would have voted for him, it sounds like.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was a funny thing I found. Eucalyptus trees also used to make didgeridoos, Casey.
I think I would have assumed that, actually, but you should never make assumptions like that.
No, of course, a didgeridoo is a traditional Australian Aboriginal wind instrument.
Oh, so cool.
And I'm going to play a little clip of some didgeridoo.
Oh, my God, Alex.
Right here.
So guttural.
It's extremely guttural.
I love it.
It's made from the hollowed out trunk of a eucalyptus tree.
I'm just amazed they could do that.
It's pretty incredible. I love that instrument. But if you didn't like that instrument, of course you could call it a didgeridoo. I just want to say that.
I like that.
So let's move on to animal uses. Of course, the number one animal in the eucalyptus's life, Casey. On three, ready?
One, two, three. Koalas. Oh, I should have said sugar glider.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
All right.
You cooperated with the bit.
I did.
Koalas are big time into eucalyptus.
That's what I hear. And I hear they're a little bit, lacking in facilities, if you will.
Yeah, koalas are dumb as shit.
Yeah, that's...
And they love to eat these toxic leaves. We're going to talk about the toxicity of the eucalyptus leaf in a bit after the break. Mm-hmm. But, Casey, they have a specialized gut biome to basically process these extremely toxic leaves. And they're not nutritious, eucalyptus leaves.
I've heard that, yeah.
So koalas just have to eat a shit ton to get anything out of them.
I feel like that is just such a silly problem to have. You're like, oh, this grass is so bad for me. I only get a tiny bit of anything from it. So I'm just gonna eat a lot of it.
Yes.
Feels like you should just switch.
They're so dumb.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? I'm going to eat that bug over there. That's what I'm going to eat.
Yeah.
I wonder if their just stomach can't handle it at this point.
So that toxic stuff that makes it a good disinfectant, this oil, good for cleaning products, it basically gets soaked into their tissue and they process it in this like extra special part of their stomach.
That's
and then
so it funny.
Absorbs into their tissues. So koalas taste like crap. You can't. You don't want to eat a koala.
See,
Casey,
that's why there's no culinary things in Australia, because they can't eat. They want to eat the koala, but they can't.
This is an interesting progression to the theory.
It tastes terrible.
The nectars from the flowers, Casey, loved by many insects, birds, bats, and possums.
Yes,
weirdly.
Possums. There's so many wacky possums around there. Like possums in the tropics, they're everywhere.
More marsupials.
Yeah, exactly.
There is a beetle called Ostroplatypus incompertus.
It's incomparable.
It's an incomparable platypus beetle from Australia. It makes its galleries exclusively inside eucalyptus trees.
Oh, that's too bad. The eucalyptus tree probably doesn't like that.
But here's the kind of beautiful recyclable nature of this tree, Casey. Uh-huh. A gallery is made inside of it, mm-hmm. kills the tree,
yeah,
right? Or termites.
Yeah.
And then somebody comes along, hacks it down, and makes a didgeridoo out of it. That's how they hollow out those trees. They use trees that are hollowed out by beetles and bugs. All right.
That makes sense then. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a little decay starts it up. Okay, yeah. All
perfect.
Right. I'm on board with this.
Yeah, cool. The eucalyptus is also called home by the largest moth known to man.
What is the name of that moth?
Zelotypia stacii.
Stacy's Zello moth.
Mm-hmm. It has a 250 millimeter wingspan. For our American friends, that is 10 damn inches.
God, that's huge.
It is the biggest moth in the world.
I love the idea of like walking through a forest and like feeling like this breeze, like, whew, you're like, oh, what's blowing next to me? And it's just a giant moth. Alex, can't
handle
it.
Gives me the shudders.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's because it's so cool. It's so like you could cut one of those wings off and use it as a fan.
Okay.
Yeah, poor moth, though. I guess I feel bad.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, just gotta cut the wings off of a flying animal.
Environmentalist Casey Clapp.
Hey!
A moth the size of a crow.
A dinner plate.
Terrifying.
Wow, I love that. I want to see it.
Yeah, well, there's pictures online, I'm sure.
I want it to land on my shoulder.
Wow, that would be just so gross.
Yeah, like a pirate. You know how they have their parrots?
Oh.
I want a moth.
So lastly, I'd like to speak about one of my favorite topics.
Oh, is okay.
The etymology.
That's right. Oh, I found this up and I told Drew about it. And you're like, Casey, I already know this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
The word eucalyptus was coined in 1788 by a French botanist, Charles-Louis Lethier de Brutul.
Oui.
Here's the breakdown of how this word works. EU or you means well in Greek. Okay. Calyptus means covered. So well covered.
Yeah.
And before we go to the break, one last fun little fact.
Oh, this is the one that you didn't tell me about.
No.
Oh.
This is a callback to our Black Willow episode. No, our Black Ooh. Walnut episode.
Oh, yeah.
Eucalyptus trees, unlike the Black Walnut, are proven to have allelopathic effects, Casey.
Oh my goodness, they do. Now this has been proven, you say, so people have done the actual science on this. They haven't just said so.
Yeah,
interesting. That makes sense. I could see that because of the amount of basically the chemicals, like the essential oils that we're going to be talking about here in just like 30 seconds. That is really what the problem is, isn't it? Like it inhibits the growth. Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm no botanist.
Yeah, sure.
I just read a Wikipedia article.
Hey, you know what? Good for me.
Good for me too.
You're a botanist now. Congratulations, Alex.
And here's something good for everybody. A break, Casey. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees. Get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome on back to Completely Arbitrary.
That's right.
Today we're talking the Eucalyptus regnans.
That's right, the mountain ash.
The mountain ash, the swamp gum, the stream gum swampers. The tree of a thousand names.
It's exactly what it is. Oh man, Alex, I've just, in the break, I was looking at photos of this tree because I just think it's so great. And one thing I think is so curious is that the forests down there of these trees mimic the forests of, say, here up in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
In such an exact way where I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, I expect there's a bunch of snow on the ground in a lot of these pictures. And I'm like, no, these trees don't take cold conditions. They don't do it. They don't like it.
Interesting.
And so yeah, I look at it and I, like, my brain thinks temperate forest. but they're not. They're like rainforests, like in a tropical sense.
What makes you think temperate forest?
Just by the way they look, because they're tall, straight timber trees that are like clumped together in the same way that our Douglas fir or our hemlocks would be out here.
Yeah.
And they also get to these massive, huge sizes. There's ferns all around it. There's moss growing up the side of the lower stems. So it just has the appearance of the same kind of forest that we have up here, but not like completely and in different in every way.
Yeah, I also noticed the ratio of stem to foliage is really high.
Yeah, you mean like more stem, less foliage?
It's like 90% stem, and then the foliage is just a little dot at the top.
Exactly, and that's the same thing that happens with our conifers up here. Mm-hmm. Is that they just grow these exact perfect stems, and then only the biggest, oldest ones like have these big, gigantic limbs that come out and create these more massive canopies. But otherwise, you're exactly right.
Well, Casey, today we're going to talk about essential oils.
That's exactly what we're going to do. We are not trying to sell you on some snake oil. Mm-mm. We're telling you on essential oils from trees.
That's right.
Just a little bit different than snake oil.
Well, let's talk it.
Well, so Alex, as you brought up earlier, the eucalyptus trees create all these oils. Like you said, the wood itself is oil-filled. Maybe you didn't say that. Maybe I just read that and put it in your mouth.
Yes.
But the wood is, it has oil filled within it. All these essential volatile oils are what they're called. Hmm. And we've talked about this before where, remember when we would say that if a tree cuts or gets cut, it sends out these volatile organic compounds?
Yes.
Well, that is an essential oil, essentially. And so what that means, essential oil, just means it's an oil that has the essence of the scent of that plant.
Essential comes from essence.
Yes, exactly. Which feels like a misnomer when you read it. Like, it's the essential oil. You interpret it as like, it's the important oil.
Yeah, or like this oil is essential to the tree. Like, this tree wouldn't be what it is without this oil.
Exactly, which to some extent, it's not incorrect, but I feel like it's a little bit too much, you know? Okay. So in this instance, the essence of the tree is in the oils in the sense that it is a compound that keeps things away or fights against it.
Okay.
So half the reason we like essential oils is because they have certain properties that would be really good for us humans. You named a couple of them earlier when you were talking about hanging them up or using them as incense or our human uses. Notably, they're disinfectants. Why are they disinfectants? Because they get rid of bacteria. They're antibacterial. Right. They are antifungal in a lot of cases.
Oh.
They also smell really nice. That's, that could go either way. Maybe if our noses were attuned to different things, we would be completely turned off by them.
Right.
But they also are really good for keeping away insects because they are oils that basically repel insects in the sense that they either cause them, like I was saying just now, if it smells really good to us, there's something else that might be like, oh, I can't stand that. I'm getting away from that.
Right.
And insects are famous for having extremely sensitive antennae that basically smell things. And that's how they see, that's how they feel a lot of times, is using scent. Moths are a perfect example where pheromones are hugely important in how they function. So if you have a pheromone or some scent that's out there, especially if it's so intense that we can smell it and we have very poor senses of smell, then other things that have extremely high sensitivity senses of smells. There's a lot of sense words I'm saying right now.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time keeping up, honestly. <I know. laughs>
So if there's an insect that is very sensitive to scents.
We have to shut this episode down.
Yeah, it's done.
That broke my brain.
Good.
Oh my God. That's my favorite thing you've ever said.
I'm really happy you liked it.
If there's insects that are sensitive to scents.
Oh, I just want to use the word sense now in every way. Man, if I had 2 cents for every time I said a sentence that was about an insect's sensitivity to scents.
Grinding against my brain.
Sorry, Alex. If a bug has an immediate reaction to a smell,
Oh, yeah.
It could be bad, okay. Whereas we might think it's good.
I see.
All right, there you go. I added a lot of different consonants in there to help center you again.
You did a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah, I do know that peppermint is not good for dogs. That's one example of of something that we like to smell and that
another can't animal. It.
Yeah, it's like toxic to them.
Yeah, well, especially if they eat it. But that's a similar thing. It would be toxic to them. Most likely, it'd be toxic in a way that like it destroys their gut biome or something.
Yeah.
So they like end up either vomiting a lot or they have diarrhea or something like that. And when we were watching a video about this earlier, they said that eucalyptus also, if we humans were to eat a certain amount of the oil, it would be toxic to us as well.
That's right. It was like a startlingly small amount.
Yeah, right? But it tastes so bad, there's no way that we would do that. We'd be like, what is this? And spit it out immediately.
It's like 2.5 milliliters, which could kill a human.
Stunning. Just stunning.
But then koalas eat like 100 pounds of it a day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're champs. Well, and that is because, if I recall, koalas get a bacteria from their parents. Was it from their parents' poop or like a specific kind of feces?
Yes, the mother feeds the infant koala special feces.
Oh, yeah. I really like that. Like, hold on, honey. And they pull out like a little jar of special feces.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the special feces, mom.
It's like an ornamental jewelry box.
Yeah.
And that it has, that feces has the sort of like starter kit for eating eucalyptus.
Yeah, because it has that bacteria, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that bacteria gets into the gut of the child, the baby, and then it now has that. And people, we do that all the time. Like, gut biomes are so fascinating. And that's the reason that they can eat it, is because they have this bacteria that can dissolve and effectively disarm these oils, or disarm the leaves of their oil protectors, right? But so the leaves of the eucalyptus, as well as a bunch of other different things, another Australian species, the tea tree.
Oh, yes.
It also has these same things. A lot of different fir trees do the same thing, where you can get fir or pine or hemlock essential oils.
Cedar is a really popular one.
Oh, great one. Juniper. I mean, a lot of times they put those together. Cypress. That's actually what we're smelling right now, too.
That's right.
So all of these things all have something in common, which is they are specifically designed or have evolved to be defenses against other things. Tobacco and nicotine is another kind of compound that if you have it, in fact, it kills insects in a insecticide that they created, which is really, really bad. I mean, it works really well, but that's why it's so bad. It's called neonicotinoids, and they're derived from the same kind of chemical compound.
Okay.
And the entire point of this is a defense mechanism that the trees create in and of themselves. So the trees have this in eucalyptus. It's all throughout their bark. It's actually what makes them super flammable as well, which is why they're really fire-adapted species, is because, you know, if you want one thing, it comes with the other. So they're like, well, this keeps all insects and most animals at bay. I can live free. But it just so happens I burst into flames every now and then.
Right.
Whoops. Well, I guess we're just going to have to take what we got.
You know, shoots and ladders.
Yeah, right? So they ended up basically... Hold on. I don't understand what you just meant by that.
I think what I was trying to say is the British euphemism swings and roundabouts, I think it is.
Okay.
It's like ups and downs, you know? You take some, you win some, you lose some.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Shoots and ladders.
Shoots and ladders is, you know, like the board game.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes you go up, sometimes you go down.
I see. Okay.
Swings and roundabouts.
This makes me feel good. Yeah, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
This is a swing and a roundabout. I'm sorry, Alex. I hope it didn't seem like I wasn't listening. I just, my brain had to talk and stop and catch up at the same time.
I know.
I appreciate you.
So, yeah, the trees are like, you know, I keep insects away, but also sometimes I become... a living fire god.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or perhaps a dying fire god.
Oh, no.
Many of them die from that, where they would get completely burned to the ground and then sprout back from a lignotuber, is what it's called, which is basically just an underground stem almost, which has roots coming off of it. But then as soon as fire goes over, it just bloop, everything grows right back from it.
It's the backup.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is, except it grows horizontally underground, like a rhizome kind of thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but then this species, our Eucalyptus regnans, does not have that. They actually would completely die and get killed by fire, but their seeds are fire resistant, so they will just pop right back after that.
Right. I also know that eucalyptus are very fast growers.
Very fast. Like, one of them, we were looking earlier at... Diversa loba, Eucalyptus diversa color.
Diversa color.
Yes, that one is a, what are they? It's the kauri tree.
Mm-hmm.
Kauri tree, I think. It depends on the pronunciation.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the kauri tree. Kauri tree. Kauri tree, yeah. Yeah. And it ends up basically growing, I think I read a thing that said like grows up to 36 inches or more a year. And then...
Wow.
Yeah. Like, that's 3 feet for those of you who are trying to do that. About a meter for those of you who are, you know, also not able to keep track of what we're saying.
Really covering your bases. Nice job.
Everything done, yeah. A yard, if you're a football player. So it ends up being that, like, that was the minimum size growth. I read something for that tree that said, oh, they generally live to be about 300 years old. And I was like, wait a second. Something else said they generally get about 300 feet tall.
Yeah.
A quick bit of math tells me they grow about 3 feet a year every year of their life, and then they die.
That's wild.
Crazy, right?
Another reason why they're so good for the pulp wood industry.
Exactly, yeah.
You chop a shit ton of them down.
And they grow back.
They grow back real fast.
Man, 3 feet a year is insane. 30 years, and it's 90 feet tall.
Yeah.
Stunning.
That's pretty cool.
Well, so back to the essential oils. Mm-hmm. We use them for the same reason that the trees use them. And this is a classic example of how people... historically, meaning like, you know, throughout our entire existences, have used plants as a part of our everyday lives, you know?
I don't want to take us on another tangent, so I'm just going to say this sentence.
And
we can move right back on. Black willow and aspirin.
Exactly.
Black willow has a natural painkiller, and then we chemically copied that to make aspirin.
Exactly.
So we're sort of doing the same thing with these essential oils.
Precisely, yeah. And we take those oils and we basically, you kind of have to distill them out from the plant parts, mostly the leaves, of course.
Mm.
And there's some that are better, that have stronger oils that, you know, do different things. And you can use those for all of these things, or a lot of new, I wouldn't even say new, I think we're almost rediscovering the use of these kinds of plants, in that we would make bleach and be like, this is a bleach cleaner, you know, it would do all these things. And people are like, this is like really corrosive and like it hurts my hands and it hurts my eyes and I hate all this stuff about it. So now people are trying to use plant-based materials more, and they're kind of almost rediscovering. It's not that it was ever lost. Everyone just kind of stopped paying attention to it because of, you know, basically how we use chemicals. And we always say, oh, well, if we come up with it and we can use this chemical, well, it's probably better.
Sure.
It's not all the time. You can get the same amount of disinfectant from using the essential oils of, say, the tea tree, as well as eucalyptus, and then maybe something from pine or cedar, and then other different chemicals that come in. Use those things, and then you can create the same amount of effect, or you can create the same effect, rather. Mm. And people are realizing that. So now you can get cleaners that are derived from plants that are biodegradable, but still have these properties. And we are using that right now. We're using this scent because it also has a calming effect on us. Like, why necessarily? My bet is, as we've talked about obviously 100 times, is that if you go into a forest, it smells like all those essential or the volatile organic compounds. They're in the air. You're breathing them in, and you're like, mah, and you just relax. Like, your brain takes it down a notch.
Yeah.
Could be exactly the same thing that we are having in the incense here. If you just have a candle, like, that those same compounds are now in the air, you're breathing them in, you're calming yourself. So it's like a forest bathing inside of this little box that we're in.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And that's what's cool about the eucalyptus specifically, is that they are famous for it. Each one of their leaves have glands that produce this. It's in the wood. It's most likely it's the same exact compounds that are in the soil that are causing it to be allelopathic.
Very well done.
Thank you, Alex. I've been practicing for days. And so the tree is using these things for its own health, because the tree, what does it not want to have happen to it?
It doesn't want to die.
Exactly. And how does it live? What does it use to produce all of its food?
Sunlight.
Yes, and it does that via the...
photosynthesis in the leaves.
Yes, you got it, Alex.
Thank you.
So those leaves are evergreen. Most, I think, if not all, I think there's a few species of eucalyptus that are not evergreen.
Ooh.
They lose their leaves after the dry season or during the dry season when there's just no water.
Yeah.
But most of them are evergreen because they live in these lovely tropical biomes or subtropical. And they ended up getting all these leaves, and now if they put all their effort into keeping their leaves evergreen and something comes and eats them, then they've lost their leaf. They can't just regrow new ones every single year. Mm. So those leaves are really important. So they end up growing these really cool compounds and putting them in the leaves as a protective layer, as a chemical agent against insects, against
I see.
Everything.
And so is it fair to say that like the eucalyptus maybe isn't too worried about koalas?
Yeah, I would say so, because okay. unless koalas become so prevalent that they get destroyed, or that same another insect or another herbivore will go and eat some of that koala poop,
yeah.
get that bacteria in its gut for whatever reason, however that happens, then all of a sudden it now has evolved the ability, or at least evolved the relationship with the thing that already has the ability to eat those leaves, then the eucalyptus might really be in trouble.
Right.
Because then everything else is going to start, you know, becoming able to eat the eucalyptus leaves. But that's the classic arms race that's always existed with plants and animals, is that as soon as you get one thing that works really well, over time, something is going to get around that defense.
Yeah.
And then the initial defender is going to have to evolve something else or perish.
Like the thorns of the umbrella thorn and the tongue of the giraffe.
Exactly. And so what's interesting here, Alex, is I think is that what we're finding and what we always talk about is all these really interesting things about one tree or one tree species or one group.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you take that larger thing, you're really good at this. We're saying, oh, it was like this other thing we talked about. It's like this other thing.
Yeah.
When we're doing this for like 5 years, we're going to look back and we're going to have created this web of connection between everything, where you can say, well, every tree is fighting against every other thing in this world. It just so happens the umbrella thorn took this example because it was getting eaten by these big things, so it has to grow big thorns. Insects and small mammals can get around all those big thorns, so you have to put something inside the leaves. That's what the eucalyptus does. Then you have other trees that just grow way differently or do this other thing or have whatever it is that fights against it. You can make all these fun connections. And then there's other trees like the larch. It's just like, I don't care. You can just take whatever you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to grow it back.
This web you're describing of connections, this is the real Woodwide
this,
Web.
This, exactly. It's the World Woodwide Web.
The World Woodwide Web.
No, oh, that's a www.
Well, Casey, this is a grand time to go into our review of the eucalyptus regnans.
I think so.
Here's how it'll go. We are each going to give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. This season, of course, honor spelled H-O-N-O-U-R.
The Australian Y.
It'll be strange to go back to the American spelling next season.
Yeah, I'm going to feel very archaic when I do that.
Yeah. Well, Casey, as our resident expert,
all right,
we shall begin avec toi.
All right. So here's what I think. So I'm a little bit put off. I love that this is a superlative tree, and I love that the forests are it's the Gondwanan version of the Pacific Northwestern forest. Gondwana being the supercontinent that split from Laurasia, which was the northern area.
Yep.
So it is, I just love that that's where it happened, and that's how they are growing. However, I got a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I'm like, no. The Douglas fir is the superlative tree, okay?
Oh my God.
Maybe the redwood, obviously, right now. But I just think that the Douglas fir, technically, I believe, in my heart, it's my bias. The Douglas fir has everyone beat. Maybe not right now, but they used to. And I know that they're saying the same thing about the eucalyptus regnans. I just have a hard time believing that a broadleaf tree can grow so tall. I believe that it's a gorgeous tree. I love its leaves. I love that it has either just bursts into flames and gives itself up to the sky, or fights back and then comes back from tubers and all these things.
Yeah.
I just really like that it has these several different strategies. I guess not this tree specifically, which is the one we're rating. But I love their lance-shaped leaves. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they kind of are lance-shaped, and they kind of have like a curve. They look kind of like a scythe blade.
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now. A scythe blade is a perfect way to describe
them. Yes! I'm going to give it a 7.6. Just going to give it a 7.6.
7.6 golden cones of honor.
I feel bad, Alex. I feel bad because I feel like I'm just kind of like poo-poo on you.
That's higher than I was going to go.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, well, I don't want to change yours, but it's just I think they're such great trees, and I guess I just want to go down there and see them and touch them in my own with my own two hands.
For sure.
But I'm also a conifer guy, you know? It's kind of like, you know, almost when you see a non-conifer doing conifer things, it's kind of like, hey, get back in your lane, eucalyptus. 7.9. I'm changing it to 7.9.
Oh, wow. Okay, 7.9 golden cones of honor for the eucalyptus regnans.
That's right.
The mountain ash.
The mountain ash.
All right. I think the eucalyptus regnans is a gorgeous tree. I have a big beef with it, and my big beef is with the person who named it.
Oh.
Call it the something with a eucalyptus.
Oh, I see.
It's
okay.
Going to make naming this episode really challenging. I like its leaves. I like that it houses koalas. Mm. I like koalas.
Yes.
They remind me a bit of myself.
What? Because you only eat leaves that are very bad for you?
I like that they grow in Australia. Australia's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were really into it in the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the smell, and I'm going to give it 7.2.
7.2.
Yeah, 7.2 golden cones of honor.
I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's not bad.
There's a lot of eucalyptus. I think if we saw it, I think that would change our hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Australians. You're going to have to send us some eucalyptus.
I also don't feel a particular emotional attachment to this specific species of eucalyptus.
Really?
Not really.
Is that?
I guess I don't feel an emotional attachment to any specific species of eucalyptus.
Do you think it...
Because when I came into this episode, I thought that eucalyptus was a species, not a genus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I learned that today.
Welcome.
Well, that was our review of the eucalyptus regnans, the mountain ash, the swamp gum, the stringy gum.
Stringy swampy gum.
We got some stringy swampy gum up in this mouth. It's time for our completely arbitrary question and answer, Casey.
Alrighty.
Today's question is from Matthew Johnson. What's up, Maddie?
Hello, Matthew.
Hey, Alex and Casey. Hi.
Hello.
Love the podcast.
Hey, great start.
Haven't missed an episode since the start. You guys are amazing. That's nice.
Get out of here. He's just buttering us up is what he's doing. I love getting buttered up, though.
I had a question about tree grafting.
Oh.
Is grafting at all beneficial for everyday people, or is it only used in commercial settings?
All right, Matthew Johnson, what a good question.
Yeah, what do you think, Casey?
Alex, are you familiar with grafting as a thing?
I had to Google it before we started recording.
Okay.
I think it's unnatural and weird and makes me uncomfortable. And it's a little creepy.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
But grafting seems very, like, Frankenstein-esque.
It is, yeah.
I don't know almost anything about it. I know that you literally cut and tape a branch into another branch.
That's exactly it.
And the tree is like, I'll take it from here.
I'll go. It is. Yes, Alex, you're right. There's a couple different kinds. It's gotten a little more refined over time.
Sure.
But essentially, it's exactly what it is. You have one plant part and you cut off the top of it, and you have another plant part or another stem or mostly, and you cut that stem. So you have two different trees, same exact size, same diameter. You cut them and then you switch them. So you put the top part on the bottom part of the other tree.
Okay.
And then you literally, you're exactly right. Like sometimes they put some kind of hormone on there or some weird glue stuff, and then they tape it and they just let it sit there. And then ideally you have it matched up perfectly that the cambium layers all around the outside of either one of those stems basically are touching. So then they're like, oh yeah, it's my same old homies.
Yeah.
And they grow together and they become a new thing.
It's a bit like undoing nature, no?
It kind of is. And so in the commercial industries for tree growth, it comes in handy for a lot of different ways. One way would be if you have a tree that is it's really beautiful. A Japanese cherry is a great example.
Okay.
Where a Japanese cherry with double flowering flowers, super gorgeous. However, because it's that doubling flower or double flower, it doesn't have...
It can't reproduce.
Exactly. So you can't make more of them unless you take cuttings from it.
Oh, okay.
So you grow one, and then as its stem is coming out, you can clip off that that stem, flip it from horizontal to vertical, and then cut a rootstock or cut another tree that's growing, another Japanese cherry, but just a normal variety, a normal species, cut that off and then stick the branch onto the old stem. Now that is a new tree, as long as the graft takes, which it doesn't always. But they also will do that with buds, where they'll take a bud of one tree and they will put it onto the bud of another tree, and then that bud will grow into a new tree, and they clip off the rest of it.
Wacky.
Yeah. So it's really, they've gotten very good at it. It can be good, quite literally wacky, because they whack it off. But the fun thing about it is that it works well for certain trees where if you can't reproduce that tree, you have to take it by cuttings. Sometimes you can just put root hormone and have new roots grow from that area, but other times you just graft it onto a rootstock that's really good. Another example is a kind of tree that grows and has really big, beautiful flowers, or has like a unique shape or appearance of the leaves, some cool thing that we really like. But the tree, if you grow that variety out, the actual upper canopy is really beautiful, but its root system sucks. Like, for whatever reason, that variety grows a certain way above ground. Its roots are just pathetic. Then you can cut that off, graft it onto a rootstock of the same species of tree, but a different variety that has really, really good, strong roots. Now you have the best of both worlds, right?
Wow, okay.
So that is that we have a cherry tree out here that is invasive. It's the bird cherry or sweet cherry. And that's exactly how it became invasive, is that it has incredible root systems, but we wanted to have the fancy parts of cool cherries. So we put it on the really tough root system, but then at some point that root system sprouted, made cherries, birds ate it, and now it's escaped.
So to address Matthew's question, is it beneficial for everyday people or used in only commercial settings?
Yeah, I think it is beneficial for everyday people if you like cultivars, the cultivated variety of trees.
Yeah.
Because they would use it in a commercial setting to grow a bunch of plants and then sell those to you to grow wherever you want to grow it.
Okay. You could also maybe say, like, there's these two apple trees.
Yeah.
Let's pretend that we're back in, like, 1800s.
All right.
There's these two apple trees. This one, we can grow a lot of them. They grow really fast, but the apples taste like crap.
Yeah.
These ones, the apples taste wonderful, but it's so hard to get them to grow. Could you graft a branch from the delicious apple tree onto the root system of the really fast growing apple tree?
Yes.
And suddenly you have fast growing delicious apples.
Exactly. And that's the quintessential way that it affects everybody, that you could use it on a person, you know, an individual basis.
Yeah.
But there's another thing that you can do. There's two other ways, Alex, that I think we should talk on. One is that if you have an apple tree or a cherry tree, you could literally do exactly what you just said, but they have made it work. So you have one stem in the ground. This cherry tree grows up, and then they take several different species or varieties of cherries, the Bing cherry, the pie cherry, another kind of cherry, you name it, Rainier. Take all of those, and you can take cuttings from all those three or four or five different species or varieties, and you can graft them as branches onto one single tree.
Wow.
So you have branch A is producing Bing cherries, branch B is producing Rainier cherries, branch C, branch D, so forth and so on, making different kinds of cherries.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've seen that with apples, with cherries, with a bunch of different things.
That's, as I've said before, a bastardization of nature.
That is a Frankenstein if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah, that's crazy.
There's one other cool way that I think people should do more often. I think I've only seen it a handful of times.
Okay.
So if two branches, I think someone actually put this on our Instagram the other day, where there was a branch from one tree, just one big tree growing up, a branch came over and was rubbing on another branch from the same tree. Rubbed together to the point where the two branches then lost their bark, but their bark and cambium layers were then touching.
Oh.
And they ended up grafting themselves together.
Aha.
So I've seen that a bunch of different times where two branches will graft themselves together and then grow and get huge. And you have like this weird like branch that kind of comes together and then just becomes one. And you're like, well, how did that happen?
Interesting.
It's very strange. However, I've seen that happen on purpose where someone had a beech tree. It's out in Lake Oswego at a garden. And this big beech tree was coming up, but it had two main dominant stems, which are usually bad because it's not a very well-formed union at the base. But they had two branches they were growing out towards each other. So they angled those branches down, grew them out to each other, cut off the tips, and then grafted those two branches together, basically as if they were cabling both of those stems together. So the trees grew up, two stems growing away from each other, and then there were two individual branches that they grafted together between the two stems, maybe up like 30 or 40 feet into the tree. Those two stems grafted together, and now they're putting on wood just like any other normal branch. So it's literally a built-in support system for the tree of and by the tree.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
It's weird.
I think that's super cool. Imagine making a ladder out of tree branches or something like that.
I mean, that's some like serious, like if you want to be like a professional treehouse crafter. That's some like next level shit into your treehouses is using the tree to make the house.
Exactly.
You know? That's cool.
Yeah. So I'd say yes, it is helpful in a person-to-person sense because we benefit, you know, you can plant one of those grafted apples in your yard and you can get those delicious apples that grow on really good rootstocks, cherries, things like that. In other instances, I think they're awful because you're just like forcing a tree to grow. And when they do it commercially, usually it's because they have fancy trees they want to grow on, less fancy trees, and inevitably they do it really quickly. Some are really good at it, but if they do it poorly, then you just have a really, really awful graft point way down low on the tree. And then people would plant those trees and you just get these weird bulbous things growing at the base because that's like the rootstock that's growing really, really fast. The top part still doesn't grow really fast because they have different genetics.
Yeah.
So you have this top part that's not growing really fast, this bottom part that is growing really fast, but it's connected. So it kind of looks like you have a 1 foot diameter pipe that immediately grows down to a 6 inch diameter pipe. Oh. And then you have this weird looking tree. It happens on Japanese cherries all the time.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
A bunch.
Have you ever seen a weeping Japanese cherry?
Maybe.
Well, it's a weeping variety of cherry, so all the branches just kind of grow down.
Yeah.
How do you get that up high so you have it like a 6 foot tall weeping Japanese cherry?
Oh, you graft it on top of a pre-existing stem.
Exactly, way up there. So it looks cool and you can make it work, but also you can always see the graft where these things happen. I've seen it on a bunch of other trees, some different species of ash tree, maple tree, all these things. They can look really bad, and then if the rootstock ends up fighting back, basically somehow you can get this thing called reversion where the upper portion of the tree will revert back to the normal genes that it's probably getting from the rootstock somehow in some way, because trees and, you know, genes and weird things like that, like imagine grafting someone else's arm onto your arm.
Yeah.
It's going to look different. It's going to do weird things.
Frankenstein-y indeed.
It's so Frankenstein-y. So yes. Yes and no.
Cool.
There's the answer.
A very comprehensive answer. Thank you so much for your question, Matthew Johnson.
Thank you.
And if you have a question about trees or other related topics, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's A-R-B-O-R-T-R-A-R-Y pod. Or follow us on Patreon. Support the podcast with monetary currency.
Yes, we also don't accept Bitcoin.
You can join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month or the Cone of the Month Club for a unique cone sticker illustrated by a special independent artist every month. And Casey.
Alex, what a delight. It smells great in here.
Good midday to you.
Good midday to you as well.
Thank you for this episode of Completely Arbitrary.
Go light a candle, everyone.
Yeah, go light a eucalyptus candle and thank your lucky stars that it's not toxic to us.
And it hasn't burst into flames yet.
That's right.
At least the tree. Maybe, hopefully the candle will.
Yeah, the candle's meant to burst into flames.
Yeah, in a controlled fashion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Burst is the wrong word. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Goodbye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our production consultant is Olivia Frankie. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by The Mini Vandals. Thanks for listening.